Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
I really love that intro music that comes from Kevin MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod. Great guy. He has a lot of free music up on his website. So check it out if you have a blog, if you have a podcast, you know. He's got a lot of cool music he lets people use for free. Anyhow, this is Alejandro Rojas here to talk with Rob Switek today. So many of you know I'm the MUFON Director of Public Education, so I handle media, all of that fun stuff for MUFON International, and our guest tonight is one of my MUFON bosses. We have a board, a business board made up of 7 or 8 people, and they're really kind of the guys who the brain trust, figure out what we're going to do and how. James, our international director, you might have seen him on our Discovery show. He's the guy who kind of does a lot of the day-to-day, but he has a lot of guidance from some very wise and intelligent people who have been in this field for a long time. Most of them have been in this field for decades, including our guest tonight, Rob Switek. He has been involved with the Fund for UFO Research out of D.C. He's also FUFOR. I love the alphabet soup that the term UFO lets you create. FUFOR. He's also been part of the UFO Research Coalition. So that, what would that be? UFORC. There's a new fork too out there you've probably heard of. There's KUFOS. There's a lot of them. But yep, this is a gentleman who's been with FUFOR, MUFON, and KUFORC. So we'll talk to him a lot about what he's done over the decades. He does. You've probably seen him on a couple documentaries out there. And he also speaks at conferences. In fact, he's at a conference right now. So we'll ask him about that. However, before we get to Rob, I think he's on the line. If you could just give me a sec. I always like to go over some UFO news. So first off is theexaminer.com. Some of you have probably seen this site. It's become like this hubbub of UFO information, which is wonderful. It was a website put up really just to get news across, and they had a great idea of having some blogs in local areas on different subjects. So getting some local people that are experts on this or that, including I've seen like a beer examiner. Denver has a beer examiner. But a lot of areas have UFO experts, and a lot of them are MUFON members, which is wonderful. So Roger Marsh started one in Chicago. He has now become the national UFO examiner, and he actually works with MUFON. And he was doing this already. He was putting together MUFON reports and kind of writing little stories on them and putting them up on his website. Now this gives him a national audience, which is great because he does a good job. So one of the news links I have up here, and of course, if you're listening on a podcast, you could go to ufothinktank.com and scroll to the bottom, and you'll see these news pieces. Or if you're on the Blog Talk Radio, you could click on the right-hand side for the UFO Think Tank Yahoo groups. You could actually subscribe to that, too. Or if you're a MUFON member, I also send these out on the MUFON Yahoo groups. So You could go to the MUFON.com and get these stories. But Roger Marsh has put out a lot of MUFON reports this week, reports over Utah, Texas, and Pennsylvania. So we have a lot of sightings going on. He wrote another story about three or four sightings of disc-shaped objects. And, of course, if you're familiar with UFOs, even though people think it's kind of silly, some people are shocked when they see, you know, different logos with the disc on there. And I've been asked before by reporters, well, don't you think that's kind of trivializing things and kind of silly? And I say no, because that's what people report. People are seeing silver discs just like they copied and put in the movies back when. So that's what people are seeing. They also see V-shapes. And in Pennsylvania, he writes some stories on some V-shapes that people have seen out there. So there's a lot of news there you'll want to check out. John Schuchler, another member of our business board, he luckily keeps an eye on the media and sends me some links. So we have a couple links of photos being taken of UFOs out of Japan and the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic actually has the photo on the story. The Japanese one doesn't. But the Japanese story is very interesting because it talks about how a lot of people in Japan don't like to mention that they have sightings because of fear of ridicule and social standing. But they've had a couple famous people, a couple younger famous models and stars and things like that come out and talk about the UFOs that they've seen. So they're hopeful that that'll kind of change that perspective. Another story that's interesting because it comes once again from the Examiner, but it comes from the Denver Progressive Examiner, meaning this is a guy who typically writes about politics, but he has a story about Phil Schneider, UFOs, and the black budget. So if you're not aware of who Phil Schneider was, this is a gentleman who came out and said that he was an engineer. He said that he helped build secret underground bases in New Mexico. He says he helped build one under DIA in Denver, and he died in a mysterious way. And if you go to YouTube, you can see some interviews with him. He says that aliens shot him with a laser and fried off his fingers and cut open his stomach, and he has these actual physical wounds that you could see. So obviously a very controversial subject, but interesting that a political writer should be getting into that area. And then finally, this weekend, I think starting tomorrow and all week long, the History Channel is going to have a show on ancient astronauts and aliens. So that ought to be good. It's going to have Eric Von Däniken. If you know him, he way back in the 70s started looking into what he called ancient astronauts, or evidence of aliens and alien pictures and alien visitations in the distant past. So that should be a very interesting story on something that you guys might want to check out. So there's the UFO news for the week. Let's move on, and I think I've got Rob on the line. Let's talk to our good buddy. I'm real excited to have him.
Here, Alejandro.
There we go. Hey there. How you doing?
Good, Alejandro. Good to speak with you. Good to be on your show.
Yeah, you too. It's always fun to talk, and we've got another symposium coming up this summer, which is always fun for all of us to hang out and talk and catch up.
Yeah, they're intense, I will say that.
You know what's
interesting?
With our
board meeting and with the guests and everything, it's an intense weekend.
It's busy, busy. But I think what's interesting now that I think about it, a lot of the times when we sit down and talk, we're not really necessarily talking about UFOs.
Well, you're 100% right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say we have our business board agenda, and yeah, we're not actually talking about details of sightings so much as we're talking about how we're going to expend the resources of MUFON, or how we're going to handle a particular situation or state director or whatever the case might be. Very little actual UFO reports are discussed at our business board meetings, I will say.
Yep, you can go to Roger Marsh's UFO Examiner to get those details. But you're at a conference right now.
Yeah, I'm at the International Fortean Organization Conference, and I didn't make it back to my hotel. Let's put it this way. 8 minutes ago, I was sitting across the table from Bud Hopkins, and now I'm sitting in the parking lot. And so and the company is equally good in each instance. So that's how that is.
Well, hopefully you've got some decent weather and you're not freezing out in the car or something.
Yeah, thank the Lord here. It's 70 degrees or 65 degrees or something. Otherwise, this would be an ordeal.
Well, good. I know a lot of people just got back from Laughlin, and that's what's a lot of fun out there, the warm weather in the winter.
Yeah, you got that right. That's a big conference and a lot of speakers, and one of our people from Northern Virginia was going out there to Laughlin, so I'm looking forward to meeting with him maybe next week and sitting down and finding out what he has to say about the speakers he saw and the tenor of the conference and that type thing.
All right. Well, I want to start with you with getting back to the past and kind of how you got involved with all of this. And I believe, from what I've read, you got involved in the late 60s.
Yeah, I hate to have to admit that I've been around in the field that long, but you are correct, Alejandro. That's my interest was peaked in the late 60s, and it's never been unpeaked since then, let's put it that way. And I'm still as fascinated by this subject as I was back in 1968.
Mm-hmm. And it was the Condon Report that got you really interested?
Yeah, you know, it sort of was that. As sort of in contradistinction to nowadays, when we had details of UFO sightings, they appeared on the front page of the newspaper, not in the style section or in the culture section or in a joke section, but news was actually on the front page. And I got hooked over a sighting. I don't pretend to be an abductee. I was never sucked up into a UFO or anything like that, but the sightings got me hooked. And simultaneously with them, I read about this group of people, of scientists actually, that was looking into the subject at the University of Colorado. And I just thought that was so marvelous. And I figured to myself that after having read just a while about UFOs, that it would probably be a matter of just a few years before this whole mystery would be sort of rolled up once the professional scientists got involved and we'd know all the answers. And little did I know that 40 years from that day, you know, you and I would be having this conversation, and we essentially know as much about UFOs now as we knew back then. We haven't learned too much about the actual phenomenon.
Right. And so you said it was a couple sightings, though, that originally got you interested.
Well, yeah, I don't remember what ones they were, but like I say, local sightings would be on the front page of a newspaper, and UFO books were...
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, we're very, very highly placed in stores. It wasn't difficult to find a UFO book. And reading a few of those, it just completely got me intrigued, as fascinated, whatever word you want to use there, as to this strange subject that was going on all around normal, everyday life.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't actual personal sightings that you had.
No, I've never had a sighting, unfortunately.
Really? That is interesting, because it's interesting that I know a few. I know John Schuessler. Well, he has had a sighting, but, you know, he was in this for a long time before then. And me, too. I didn't get involved with this from a sighting that I had. It was really a disclosure project, and I had sightings years later. But
Yeah. It was the intrinsic intellectual curiosity that just got me involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me as well. So, you know, that brings up another topic I kind of wanted to mention too, and your thoughts on back then. You thought, oh, look at these scientists in Colorado are picking this up. We must be close to a disclosure or an understanding.
Yeah,
coming
but that's
today. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you're right. Go on. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Coming up to today, then, do you feel that, you know, there's a lot of stories about us getting close, about Obama and more less secrecy? Do you think we're any closer today than we were back then?
No, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't think we're any closer today than we were back then. You know, every change of administration, or almost every 4 years, even if the administration doesn't change, I seem to hear stories about, wow, disclosure's right around the corner. Reagan's going to release details of UFO sightings once he's out of office. Well, Clinton's going to release details of UFO sightings because he's getting to an end of his term. Bush is going to, you know, and it probably goes back to Eisenhower, you know, or before. And I just don't feel that this subject is releasing its grip on the mystery, that it's releasing its grip of its secrets very easily. We're just not making any progress, unfortunately, Alejandro, in my little opinion here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I hear this from the people who have been in this for decades. Leo Sprinkle, John Schuessler, a couple of the people that I've asked and have the same response, that, you know, we've been in this for a long time. There were UN meetings way in the past about UFOs. That's nothing new. There were presidents who have talked about UFOs in the past. That's nothing new. They've gone through so many times where they thought it was going to happen that, you know, a little more skeptical when it comes to a lot of the talk that goes on today.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm privileged here in the Virginia, Washington, D.C. area to know fellows like Richard Hall and Don Berliner, who were both key and instrumental players with the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena back in the mid-60s and early 60s, NICAP. And I really feel that from, say, 1965 to 1970, the tide actually started to turn back then. And there was a core or a cadre of scientists, including Dr. McDonald, James McDonald, who were making inroads into serious investigation of this subject and in training more scientists into the subject. For example, when Dr. McDonald would speak before, scientific group, the AAAS, American Association for the Advancement of Science, once he spoke before the Naval Ordnance Laboratory, he spoke before audiences that were composed entirely of scientists and engineers, professional guys. And I have some of the recordings from these, I have the recordings of these speeches. And when he gave his talk, you could hear a pin drop in the room. There was no snickering of embarrassment or laughter or derisive statements. And these were all scientists, practically none of whom worked in the UFO field. But they were there to hear what Dr. McDonald, an esteemed scientist, had to say. And in contradistinction to today, where, you know, Alejandro, how hard we work to get any new scientist coming into the field, but hardly anybody ever speaks before a purely scientific conference on UFOs nowadays. And it just doesn't happen. And the tide turned, and the Colorado report was released, and ever since that day, I think we just haven't been on the ascendancy with regard to mainstream science.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel when that report came out?
Well, I felt I was obviously kind of young, and I'm still just a teenager, but I felt damn downcast, to be honest with you. I recall knowing that the report was going to be published in January 1969, and eagerly turning on the TV and going to the book department of a store I was in, and lo and behold, there was the University of Colorado report, and almost simultaneously it appeared on the news with a very disconcerting conclusion that Dr. Condon put at the beginning of his report, that there was no reason to scientifically study this subject, that there was nothing to it. And yeah, even for me, a little outsider, a kid, I was very, very, very disappointed.
Yeah.
Walked around downhearted.
Mm-hmm. And that seemed to have a big effect then on that professional field, group of people that you're talking about, because that's where you saw that tide turn where there were no longer these addresses to these large groups of scientists?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. The scientists sort of got into lockstep behind Dr. Condon, and 2 years after the Colorado report came out, Dr. McDonald committed suicide, and shortly thereafter, NICAP disbanded, at least the NICAP that was around then. It continued for a few years after. But yeah, from a scientific point of view, the study of the subject dropped off drastically. You know, sort of like the Dow Jones has dropped off drastically here in the past couple months. That's how scientific interest in UFOs dropped off.
Yeah.
And we haven't regained it.
Yeah. Well, we're working on it. Luckily, you know, I had a call with Robert Wood, another one of our directors, and Robert Powell and Ron Regier yesterday, where we're working on a scientific symposium where hopefully we'll be able to gain some of that ground back. Cross our fingers.
That's what we need. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's an admirable effort, and that's what we need. And tomorrow, for example, Alejandro, I will be discussing for part of my talk the Stephenville MUFON radar report, because that's an enormously important document, and it deserves to get out there to the mainstream community of people, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, getting into, you know, Condon's a good start, because that's what why MUFON started, a kind of a result of Condon. Hey, you guys aren't going to do it, so we'll do it. And I believe that the Fund for UFO Research started around the same time. Is that correct?
Yeah, the fund started about 1979. And Richard Hall, Don Berliner, and one of our other directors in MUFON, Tom Dooley, were actually instrumental in founding the Fund for UFO Research. These guys decided one day, sitting in a bar someplace, that what was needed in the UFO field was an organization that could just raise money and give the money back out again for scientific research, and not publish a journal or not have a membership organization, but just seek to gain funds and seek to give them back out again to scientists or other researchers. And up until recently, that model worked fairly well, and we've just sort of run out of money, unfortunately, but we succeeded and hopefully will succeed in the future in doing some pretty interesting things on a little bit of money.
What were some of the interesting projects that you guys were able to work on?
Well, we did a lot in had, for example, gathered together all the witnesses, living witnesses to various aspects of the Roswell mystery, who had experienced these elements of the Roswell mystery firsthand back in 1947. We've paid people to investigate UFO photos. We contributed to the crop circle research back in the late 80s. We've done a lot of work with abductees, both in Virginia and just with other researchers who came to us with projects they wanted us to help fund. So I guess I could honestly say that the fund has been involved in almost every facet of the UFO field that you could think of, from history to abductions. Another alphabet soup list of things.
All right, so let me ask you about a couple of those topics that you guys tackled. Roswell, first of all, do you feel there is evidence then that there was a secret, and do you go as far as to believe that it was an extraterrestrial craft?
Well, you know, Alejandro, I don't really make too many statements of fact in this field. I do think that what happened back in at Roswell, the Brazel Ranch, was profound. Whether it was the crash of an alien object, I don't know. I tend to think that it probably was, and we just have never really received the full story on what was recovered back then. There's some documents, there's eyewitness testimony, but the truth probably remains much like the Ark of the Covenant in the Indiana Jones movies, that it's hidden someplace and compartmented off that so securely very few people even know about that stuff now. Once in a while it's trotted out, and maybe they reconsider it in the light of new technology, can't make any heads or tails of it, and it's put back in again, and there it stays. Few people know. Mm-hmm. And until the government actually comes out with the actual wreckage or documents, I don't think we're going to progress anywhere beyond where we are now with that subject.
Mm-hmm. So then, what were some of the interesting things, some of the witnesses that you guys had gotten contact with, what were they saying?
Well, yeah, they told a very intriguing story. For example, we got Jesse Marcel to come out then. We got a fellow named Vern Maltese. I don't think he's alive anymore. Another fellow named Chrome Schroeder, a bunch of people who played various roles in the Roswell episode as we knew it back in 1990. And we had all the UFO researchers that were looking into crashed UFOs. So we had Stan Gordon there and Kevin Randall, Stan Friedman, of course, and a number of other people. And we just asked them to do an oral history project, and we recorded on video what they had to say, their testimony, and we grilled them, and that's how that went. We got their stories, and for posterity, and we later came out with a DVD or a VHS tape, and that's still available if a person wanted to get a copy of that.
Really?
And
where would you find it?
Oh, well, the Fund for UFO Research still sells that thing. I can't say that our website's going strong, but we do have a DVD. It's called, the Roswell Experience or Roswell Best Evidence. I can't remember what the title of that is. But it's like an hour or two-hour long DVD that has the best of the excerpts from this videotape testimony. And
cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat, to be honest with you. It's just raw sort of footage with some people asking questions, and it's not high tech production or anything like that. But it's a valuable and at least was a valuable adjunct to the researchers as of say circa 1990.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a cool video. So
yeah,
what
Walter
do you think
Howell
of Colonel?
There.
Okay. Who unfortunately has passed away now.
Right.
But not without leaving us some pretty interesting tidbits.
Back then.
Affidavit.
Back then, Walter Haut wasn't talking. This is a curious thing. Walter Haut wasn't talking about having seen bodies or anything like that. He just gave us basically the story of how he wrote the press release and what happened subsequent to that. He didn't say anything about seeing bodies, nor did he even hint that he had seen these anything beyond just the press release. I don't even think he saw any of the wreckage, according to his testimony then. And as you probably know, obviously, not too long before he died, he came out with videotape testimony indicating that he did see something significantly more important than just wreckage, that he saw bodies of a type, some creatures or something like that. And I don't know whether he just withheld that deliberately from us. I don't know what to think of Walter Haut's testimony.
Mm-hmm. What about Colonel Corso's testimony?
Yeah, there I have a lot more reason to be skeptical, Alejandro. At least this is just from my opinion. Corso has, or did over the course of the little time he was involved in ufology publicly, alleged so many almost impossible things that I just couldn't buy it. Bases on the moon, on the far side of the moon, spectacular inventions that I know from my work at the patent office weren't invented by aliens, but were invented by human scientists and engineers, that I just don't accept his testimony. I'm not saying he wasn't involved maybe with UFOs some way, but the gist of his testimony as being at the center of this sort of efforts to get alien technology into the hands of private industry, I just don't buy it.
Interesting. Well, why do you think someone like him, with the background he has, would make up something like that?
Well, obviously, Alejandro, this kind of testimony sold a book, and people used to say that of Ed Walters. Well, why would Ed Walters fake all these UFO photographs? Well, it made him a lot of money, you know, and it made Corso a certain amount of money, and it brought him a certain amount of fame. He was on TV shows, his name was being bandied about in at least the UFO community, and he might have had a role to play in the field back then, but he substantially exaggerated it, and I just don't give credence to the wilder aspects of what he has to say. I mean,
okay.
Just to take the part of inventions, I know how the patent process and the invention process works, having been involved in it for so many years at the patent office.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that night vision scopes, for example, had a long pedigree of inventions before they reached the stage of development they have today, for example. And people think, well, Velcro was given to us by the aliens. That's complete nonsense. Velcro was invented by a Swiss inventor, I think, back in 1955. And I have this. I think it was a Swiss patent or something like that. And the transistor, the events in electronics in the mid-1940s and the early 1940s were leading inevitably and ineluctably toward the transistor. It didn't just jump on the scene fully formed. It replaced the tube, you know, the triode tube, and it was a very logical extension of existing technology.
Mm-hmm. All right. And speaking of some of the more fringe areas, or at least at some perspective, is abductions. You said that your Fund for UFO Research also has worked on the abduction area. So what do you feel about that aspect? You were just talking with Bud Hopkins, it sounds like. So what are your thoughts on abductions?
Yeah, my thoughts, I guess it would, you know how abductions are, Alejandro. You and I could probably have this radio program and extend it to 24 hours, and we'd still hardly cover just abductions. But, yeah, definitely something is going on there. And again, abductions are sort of like the wave-particle duality of physics. You know, we say a light particle can act sometimes like a piece of a wave, like in the ocean, or can be acting like a particle. And abductions have this sort of dual nature. Some of the abductions seem to take place in this physical reality as we know it, and some of them seem to involve, whether it's just some kind of a mental abduction, I don't know. But there's a physical component to it, of that there's no doubt. And the poor abductees are undergoing some kind of an experience that leaves them traumatized. And by no means is it purely a mental phenomenon. I'm not going to try to characterize it like that, because people are missing from their homes, and they are gone from their cars, and they are returned, and there's this gap of time. And something is going on, of a very profound nature.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to quickly add, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this too much, but we did have the AMP project, the Ambient Monitoring Project, or the Abduction Monitoring Project, where we actually put boxes of instruments in people's homes to register what was going on in the space of their bedroom, mostly, during the night when they said they would be having abductions. And that project we got a sponsor for, and we spent several hundreds of thousands of dollars on that project to try to figure out what was going on with abductions.
And that's still under analysis, right, all of the results or the data?
Yeah, it sure is. We're looking for a few good statisticians, and we have reams of data, but we have not been able to find a person yet who has been able to devote the time needed to look at all that data. And if there's a pattern there, or if there's a signal there, we haven't yet had anybody bring it out, and we're literally, Mark Rodiger of the Center for UFO Studies and I talked about this two nights ago, our latest ploy to try to find somebody, and right now we're just at loose ends.
Yeah, what I find interesting, well, of the, what sort of data were you collecting?
Well, for example, the box would measure, we've never actually released what all the instruments were. That doesn't really matter too much now. But, for example, we were measuring the presence or the absence of light, or the presence or the absence of sound. So we had a microphone in the box. And it couldn't pick up conversation, but it just picked up noise, or sound level, I guess is a good way of putting it. And we, for example, could record the temperature in a room, because sometimes abductees say it got very cold in the room during the abduction, or a bright light appeared, or that type of a thing. And so we tried to pick those instruments we thought would record what we believed went on during an abduction. So even if we don't get back any evidence that anything occurred in these people's rooms, maybe it's just because we chose the wrong instruments. But you have to start somewhere. You have to start somewhere.
But the people that you chose, did they feel they had events happen while the box was present?
Excellent question, Alejandro. Excellent question. The people were chosen on the basis of past ongoing UFO abduction experiences. And during the course of their keeping the box in their home, they were requested to keep a daily journal and to put down whether anything happened to them the night each day. So sometimes they might just check a box that said no, or other times they might check a box that said yes. And yeah, indeed, a number of the people did have what they said were abduction events happen while the box was in their room.
Okay.
And they did check the yes box in the journal.
Yeah, that's the kind of studies that are so exciting. So, I mean, I hope if there are any statisticians out there, you know, get a hold of MUFON, because we're involved with MUFON, right? We're involved with helping to – get the results analyzed, you know, get a hold of us so we could see what's there. That's sometimes there's just so much data that it's hard to get through.
Yeah, in this case, there's literally DVDs of data. The box would use a modem, and each day Tom Dooley would download the results of all the boxes, and I guess we had about 12 or 13 of them at the height of the project. At 12 or 13 abductees going, I guess we had about 6 boxes. And so each day he would collect the data from the 5 or 6 boxes out in the field, and over the course of 6 months, one box would produce an awful lot of data. A lot of it wasn't important, or it was data collected during the day, but nonetheless, some of that data is probably important, and there may be a signal there in all the static.
Mm-hmm. What's also interesting, I think, about the abduction phenomena is one where even the most conservative of UFO researchers, you know, with the most credentials out there, pretty much once you look into this field, because I know when I got started, I was a little skeptical, but once you do the research, you find that there really is something to that phenomena.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and it sort of mirrors the ongoing UFO phenomenon. But if you just, as I have done, sit down with enough abductees and realize the depth of their emotions when it comes to the subject, abduction phenomenon, and sometimes, believe me, it leaves us in tears, or shakes us, the researchers, up a great deal when we're sitting there. It's not easy to deal with abductees on an emotional level. It's far easier to deal with someone who says they saw a disc-shaped object go across the sky than it is to talk about somebody who has undergone admittedly very seemingly traumatic experiences at the hands of these, whatever this phenomenon is.
Right. I know, you know, even though being skeptical, I tried to be open when people started to come to me with sharing that they have these sort of experiences. And it wasn't long before, you know, the ones that were coming to me for the most part were saying they also see UFOs often. Some claiming they had some videos, and at least one where I looked at her videos and they were impressive. And then lo and behold, I eventually had my own experience with seeing something unexplainable with her. And now, you know, I've seen UFOs with 3 different people who claim to be abductees.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. And that's, you know, the hard stuff to throw away or to ignore.
Yeah, I can't say as I ever, maybe I'm at heart kind of, I draw back a little bit, but I always would interview abductees from the safety of my living room with a number of people. Sometimes it would be Dick Hall or my wife or whomever, but I can't say as I ever would go over to the house and spend a lot of time there. Sometimes I would interview them in the house during the day, but I never asked them to try to create an experience where I might be involved. That might be closer than I want to get.
I have. But, you know, as far as beyond seeing UFOs, I haven't seen anything more. Well, I've seen a few other things, flashes of lights and things like that, hearing strange noises.
Well, but, yeah, you're a few feet up on me.
Well, yeah, I know it can be a little, seems, people are like, are you crazy? But, you know, I want to get to the heart of it. So
yeah,
I understand what you're saying. But, you know, that's what I would advise for if there are some abductees who say they see stuff often, even during the day. I mean, my sighting with this one female I'm talking about, it was during the day. So that wasn't as scary. And what I found interesting was she was like, well, you know, come over to do some sky watching. Okay, you know, I thought it'd be a few hours outside watching the sky. No, it's mostly hanging out, looking at this, talking, going outside for short periods of time. But sure enough, like the second time, you know, just like some people say, they have a feeling. It was just going out there and lo and behold, something in the sky that's kind of strange. Well,
yeah,
there is a chat. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that's very odd. That's very intriguing because you're exactly right. Some abductees, and not all of them and at the same time or anything like that, but some of them actually see things in the sky sometimes, and other abductees, I'm convinced, somehow are taken and no object is ever necessarily seen over their house. Otherwise, you know, MUFON would be receiving literally hundreds of reports every day about low hovering UFOs over homes that were just seen by a neighbor who happened to get up to walk around the house or take the dog out or something and saw a
right.
something hovering over their neighbor's house who's an abductee. But we don't get many of those kind of reports. So
mm-hmm.
what the hell is going on with regard
that's
how
a,
do they
that's a great question because, you know, I had been working on a case where there was physical evidence, and that's where I think is interesting with abductions. I think if we're going to get a case of physical evidence, it's going to most likely be with abductees, and some people could argue Roger Lear has already done that.
Mm-hmm.
But right, these well, cases where there is evidence that this person was taken, and it's in the middle of a neighborhood full of thousands of people. Sure, this seems to happen in the middle of the night, but with nobody seeing it, you know, and with the person remembering being taken up into a with a beam into a craft, and nobody seeing that. Just like you said, that is mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And unless a person posits, as people do, that absolutely nothing is going on with abductions, it's all a mental phenomenon, that would explain the data, some of the data.
Uh-huh.
But people are actually missing, and yet they're not. We're just not seeing those objects. When I lived in Crystal City, Virginia, which is where the patent office used to be located, right by National Airport, the streets were well lit, and yet there were large apartment buildings up and down the street that I lived on, including the one I lived in. And at any time of the day or night, there was traffic on the road I lived down there, Eads Street. Any time of the day or night, people were going by, and it was well lit. And yet, within the confines of Eads Street, there would be thousands of renters, thousands of renters, and you just know some of those people were abductees based upon the demographics of abductees scattered throughout society. But yet, I never heard reports of, wow, a UFO was hovering over the apartment building down the street. Never. But yet,
right.
you just know that there were some abductees in those buildings. How is that?
Yeah. There are only two cases I've seen where I remember there was someone, wasn't it even a UN official who said he saw a UFO abducting someone in New York?
You are correct. That was Ron Hopkins' famous Linda case.
Right.
Linda
yeah.
Cortile.
And then we received a report here in Colorado once outside in Idaho Springs where they said they saw this object going like house to house and shooting this laser down for a period of half an hour in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but that's pretty good. The Travis Walton case, of course, verged very close to that. And but they're few and far between, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's all I've heard of out of thousands of cases. So you're
mm-hmm.
right. That is an aspect that's mind-boggling. I think that's why some of the better minds, personally, I am a huge fan of John Mack. And he tries to go to those other areas. Maybe there is kind of a non-physical element to all of this. Maybe it's multidimensional, but something else going on here to you've got to account for that, you know?
Yeah, I think you've put your finger on something. I personally hate to explain one mystery in terms of another, but I oftentimes have to say there's some bending of dimensions going on here. There's traveling through dimensions, and I'm not sure what that means. There's some very, very advanced physics going on here that the human race is nowhere near close to tapping into. And I think the UFO phenomenon, and here we're getting down to really a lot of speculation on my part, but having been around this field so long, it's an extraordinarily profound mystery. It's far more complex than just physical craft going across the sky. There's some other that they're able to insinuate themselves into our world and into our physical reality in some way that we're not close to explaining. And that
mm-hmm.
that's both exciting and it's also depressing because I'm not so sure that we're going to make any inroads into this phenomenon anytime soon.
Well, I like the way that Nick Pope puts it. He says it's an event-led field. Where, you know, we chase the events, and really it's the events defining what's going on. So,
yeah,
like
you said.
Yeah,
you're 100% right. And the MUFON's latest endeavor here with Mr. Bigelow is going to put what you just said to the test, because we're depending on the phenomenon to show itself here so we can get investigators out into the field.
Right.
We're at its mercy.
Right. And it, you know, it gets back to Fermi's paradox. You know, if they're here, why don't we have evidence that they're here? If they're here, like I think we both agree, then they haven't allowed us to, or haven't provided that sort of evidence, it seems. And so until they decide to, which could be tomorrow or it could be never, then perhaps, you know, we're at their mercy. We're at the mercy that way.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I'm fond of saying to people that we're dealing with, in my opinion, non-humans, and we don't know how non-humans are going to act. And so to try to predict non-humans on the basis of human behavior is ludicrous. You can just imagine the ants in the ant colony saying, well, if these large beings around here were truly intelligent, they'd contact the queen ant. And, you know, they just have no hope of understanding human society. Maybe we can't understand antdom, but we're just in two completely different worlds. And sometimes the UFO phenomenon seems that far beyond us that I wonder if we're really capable of coming to grips with whatever it is that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are. I am ultimately optimistic, but not necessarily in the short term.
Right. Well, there are some people in the chat asking some questions. There's a guy named Democratic Communist who's asking a lot of questions, but I think he already has his answers determined for him, so I don't know if we're going to convince that person. But one of the questions in there from one of the other listeners was 2012. They wanted to know your thoughts on 2012.
That's a good question. This is an aside. John Ventry, the Pennsylvania MUFON state director, spoke at the info conference a few hours ago today, and that was his topic. He didn't talk on UFOs. He spoke on 2012. And I don't know, Alejandro. I don't profess to be an expert in Aztec history or lore, and I guess I take kind of a silly approach, but I just think when December 22nd, 2012 comes, we're all just going to be going back to work. I think it's maybe a work day the next day. We're all just going to have to go back to work and earn our living. And keep heat coming into our homes if it's, you know, if we're in the colder parts of the country. And I have absolutely no idea. I don't think anything's going to happen, but that's just my I'm sorry. That's just my opinion.
Hey, no problem. You know, it's kind of funny. Franklin Carter, I don't know if you know him. He is a disclosure witness, but he's out of Wyoming. He was running some conferences out there for a little while, but really great guy, a friend of mine, and he does a talk called What About Them UFOs? He's from South Carolina. He could be Andy Griffith's brother. But, yeah, he's got that total same period of time. But he talks about, you know, making sure that you have a perspective about all of this, even with, you know, that even if disclosure happened or something, you know, they're not going to pay our bills. We're still going to have to keep on living and keep going to work and things like that. So,
you know, that's extremely well put. The fact that the aliens, that the government announces the aliens are here, doesn't mean that the next day somehow we don't have to do things, and we can't go all to pieces. Otherwise, yeah, society as we know it, civilization as we know it, will crumble. And one of the things I always like to think about is that If a person wants to see what happens when another person is told that aliens are here, all we have to do is look at abductees. And here we take the normal abductee is living his or her life, not thinking about aliens or UFOs, and suddenly they find out they're being abducted by alien beings. To make a long story short and to assume aliens are behind it, do they go all to pieces? No, they may be traumatized and they're
right.
Vastly upset, but for the most part, they keep on trucking. They're going to their jobs. and they get through life. They don't go running down the street yelling at the top of their lungs, "The aliens are here, the aliens are here." They deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think human beings are quite resilient enough to accept that aliens
yep.
might be here.
Yeah, it's interesting. In fact, most of the people, and I have seen people in this field who have kind of gotten so wrapped up in it that they have lost their jobs or they kind of are not living in reality anymore, which is, of course, that's the bad part. But most of those people are not necessarily abductees, but people who kind of have the realization of all that's going on and don't want to participate in normal society anymore, which is the big danger.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
you're
not going to
pieces. Abductees are going to work every day. And still seeing their family on Sunday or raising their children. And
exactly right. And when I speak about most people, again, I'm not, but there are always exceptions, like you noted there. There are always some people who can take the pressure, even if they're not abductees, and they sort of can't then deal with reality. But for the most part, people endure this, just like they endure the hideous things that wars present. They go through with their lives under the most adverse circumstances possible. And I think humanity will exhibit this resilience when and if the day comes we all acknowledge that we're not alone here.
Mm-hmm. Another question from the chat room is they wanted to ask about the satellite that just went up, I think, yesterday. Was it called Picaris? The one
yes.
to look for... Yeah, they wanted to ask you about that, your thoughts on that satellite.
Yeah, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I work on satellites at the patent office, and I read Aviation Week and Space Technology, and I'm vastly interested in the space program for decades now. But I can't really tell you too much of the specifics about that particular satellite. However, yeah, we are talking about these satellites, much like this SETI program, looking for planets circling other stars, and I think it's a very commendable effort, and we've already have, 300 planets or something, a little more than 300 planets discovered around other planets, and I think that this will again further our efforts to really find out how many other planets there are circling these stars. But what we're going to find out is that planets are not the exception. Probably planets circling stars are the rule, and they're going to find that there's Earth-type planets are probably a dime a dozen, and this satellite is going to be one of the first satellites that starts to reveal this truth to the world, that, again, Earth-like planets are not an exception. They're out there, and there is a lot of them out there, and here we are just starting on this is the first step on that adventure to find more planets, and the next thing we need to do is somehow, I'm a big proponent of, you know, let's go out there, by God. Let's build a starship and get out there to the stars and start finding out what's beyond our solar system. But, that, you know, that's another interview.
You know, I think what's exciting of what we've seen over the last few years, and NASA's always the slowest to get it. I mean, it took them so long to admit to water on Mars. And I think the Europeans were talking about it for a couple of years, and their evidence before NASA jumped on. But it is interesting to see, okay, we've got Drake's equation. Okay, we'll buy that. Then, you know, but still, there's no close planets that are Earth-like. Then finally, they start looking into it, and they keep finding, you know, even though they're skeptical and they say, no, this isn't going to happen, they keep finding more and more of this stuff. They keep finding more planets that could harbor life. They're finding life can exist in more places than we thought it could exist. And all of this is just piling up. So you're right. It's exciting that I agree with you. I think that's what they're going to continue to find, that there are a lot more planets out there similar to Earth than they expect.
Yeah. And the SETI project is completely prepared to accept that, I suppose. And most SETI scientists say, of course there's life out there. I wouldn't doubt it for a second.
Right.
Look at all the planets we're discovering. But the funny thing is, they're willing to accept life on, say, the nearest star, which is, what, 3 light years away or 8 years away, something. But as soon as they say, well, the alien life has Earth, it becomes pseudoscience. It's science as long as it's a star, but say it's happening on Earth. That's New Age. That's science. Somewhere in between Earth and the near star, there's a little line. Science becomes pseudoscience, at least in the set scientist's view. And to me, that's completely rubbish. The scientists are in an odd circumstance, having a lot of money and have no evidence for intelligent life. Whereas the
you're starting to cut out a little bit.
Okay, I am talking on the phone. Whereas the UFO community has no money and evidence.
Uh-oh, you still there?
I sure am.
No, okay, you're cutting out, so I didn't hear your last phrase.
Yeah, I just said, making a comparison between the SETI science and the UFO community. SETI has a lot of money, the millions of dollars, no evidence for all money, and the UFO community has money, but an embarrassment of it that in dealing with alien or non-human life. An irony, a paradox. Two sides won't.
Uh-oh, you're really cutting up right now.
I don't know. Maybe the phone's losing its charge, Alejandro.
It's losing its bars?
Maybe the my cell phone is wearing down.
Oh, okay. All right, well, let's try. Let me try with the next question. Let's see if it gets any better, hopefully.
Hearing you very well, man.
Okay, good. Oh, as a physicist, before I get to another question from the chat room, as a physicist, you know, another big argument from SETI is that it's not possible that they could travel from there to here. What do you think of that statement? To me, it sounds kind of silly with all the ideas of travel faster than light that have been talked about, even in Star Trek. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're 100% right again on that one. Anybody that says it's really a dodge, it's like, with the evidence, it seems to be things visiting, or is he? I don't know what got here. And that's another question for science to solve. Why don't you deal with the evidence? The evidence seems to be that we have these objects here of non-human design. And whenever someone says dismiss it because they can't hear from there, I just don't want to deal with it. And David, the pseudoscientific attitude.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're losing about 1 out of 5 words from you, so hopefully it'll improve itself there a little better. But that's definitely one of the topics that we want to tackle with the scientific symposium, because I know there are a lot of physicists out there with concepts that we certainly could that there are theoretical ways of going faster.
Beyond doubt, and science providers have been dealing with the subject for years, can get here for sure. We just have we haven't yet met ourselves, but we can do it. There's no reason to think that somebody else couldn't do it.
All right, so let's see, another question from the chat room. What do you think the immense sightings of UFOs point to? What are they doing and why?
Yeah, that's a question. Unfortunately, I can't answer it. The immense number of UFO sightings, the immense number means that, we are not alone. It's a non-human intelligence. I don't know what their modus operandi is. I don't know why they're here. As a scientist, we don't have enough evidence to answer those questions. I can speculate, but that's all I can.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, just like a lot of people calling in when are what they'll say, and I love that kind of answer because that's what I like to give to the media when they ask questions like that is, you know, that's all speculation. All we can do is gather the data and see what the data shows us. And the data is showing us that we're being visited by these technologies that seem to be beyond ours and under intelligent control. Unfortunately, we don't have enough data to give us motives or why they don't land on the White House laundry and things like that.
Right, and it goes back to that thing we spoke about. If a person says they're going to discuss the UFO subject because intelligence contact heads of ours first, that's again a human looking at things. And we're not dealing with here. We're dealing with aliens, and I don't know how aliens behave. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So unfortunately. That was a question from Democratic Communists, and he says he can't accept that answer. But sorry, Garrett, that's the answer we got for you, my friend.
Another answer to give him, and I don't know, he sounds like he'd be closed-minded. Maybe there's hope. You know, go and talk to people who have seen UFOs and read relevant literature on the cases. Read about the case and read the Quarrel. And read about how people analyze various photographs and then pick up your opinion. But and then talk to people. And any objective person will quickly come to my opinion, the conclusion that they can't explain the evidence. That's all to it.
Oops, and he pointed out he can accept that answer. Sorry, guy. I read it wrong. See, it was a case of me reading what I expect to see rather than looking and reading what it says. I apologize for that.
It's an honest answer.
So, disclosure. I wanted to kind of ask you about, people throw the word disclosure around a lot. And I think it's a much more complicated thing than just, hey, woo, disclosure, you know. I think there's a lot more to think about. Of course, if you asked Richard Dolan, for example, he's got, I'll talk to you about hours of what disclosure means. But what is disclosure to you?
Well, disclosure to me would be the government becoming clean on UFO holdings, whether it's documents, whether it's eyewitness testimony, whether it's physical evidence. They make a clean breath and come forward. And what does disclosure mean? The government has no idea of what's going on. We have, and they have some more cases at their disposal, but they may not have any more answers. And again, prejudge the government shouldn't say, but disclosure definitely coming out with all information they currently have under arrest.
You know what? You're still breaking up. Could I have you maybe try hanging up and calling back in real quick?
Yeah, it'll take me a minute. Let me get cell phone, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
Okay, no problem. So he'll be right back. So, yeah, I want to apologize again to Democratic Communists on that, but I loved his answer because I think that's the right way to go. We can't. Motives is so difficult, and one of the things that, especially with MUFON, that we try to do is be careful about speculation. And that could be good and bad. It could be good because if we give you a piece of information, it means it's supported by some information, it's supported by evidence, or it's supported by credible people, scientists or others who have looked in and given us this information. The bad part is maybe not such a bad thing, is that it's not sensationalistic. So sometimes people get bored with us. Why can't you speculate this? Why can't you put that together and speculate that? You know, why can't you give us more answers? And get frustrated because we can't give them answers. But then we would just be just that, speculating and sensationalist. And I think that's one of the problems with this field right now. Not to get into names, but if we were to go out and say every time an administration came in and say, look, they're going to disclose, look, they're going to disclose, look, they're going to disclose, I think that's calling wolf, crying wolf all of the time. And then we would have people get disillusioned and not want to listen to us because we don't come through with what we're talking about. But if we stick to the evidence and the data, such as the Stephenville report, where we got FAA radar reports that backed up, you know, the claims of the witnesses, that's something we can back up. That's what something that we have with professionals. Paul Robinson, I saw you asked, didn't MUFON just get backing from Robert Bigelow? Yeah, you know, we just talked about that. Rob had mentioned it. It's, yeah, essentially it is backing. It's a kind of a partnership where we keep them apprised of reports, kind of like Roger Marsh does for you all for free on his UFO Examiner. But we keep them apprised of reports, and especially big ones, and then we go out and investigate cases together. Of course, we don't have a lot of money, and he does, so he's able to get us out there quicker, such as flying people around and getting us better equipment, and then also getting some lab analysis done when necessary. So that's kind of the nature of the Bigelow thing, and I think we've got Rob back. Hello.
Yeah, I've borrowed the Virginia State Director's telephone, which is to say my wife.
All right. Great, perfect. So one of the things that I talked about, you know, when we were, while you were gone, well, actually, I want to ask you the last question. I think I asked you about disclosure.
Yeah, okay. I apologize again that my testimony, my conversation is breaking up there. I hope it's a little better.
It is better. No problem.
Oh, okay. The long and the short of it is on disclosure is that I don't think I can recreate what I just said. It's basically that the government might not know any more about ultimately the UFO phenomenon than we do. And they may have more cases, eyewitness testimony, they might even have some wreckage, but it's conceivable that they haven't figured it out either. So that disclosure might be ultimately disappointing when it comes. It might be just another question. And so, you know, ultimately, I think the government should release everything it has, and whether that would happen or not, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's kind of the same note that Nick Pope had, that he was happy Britain was finally starting to release their information. He thinks that they're just as confused as the rest of us, even though they have more and better cases now that they're letting us in on. But kind of the same type of perspective.
Yeah, and I was struck today by a few speakers at the Info Conference have said that all these other countries have released their UFO files. Canada now came forth, and I think it was Denmark and England and France. But what I would say to them is don't quite sell the U.S. short. The Project Blue Book documents were released decades ago, and we've gotten tens of thousands of pages via the FOIA requests. So the U.S. has released a lot of its files before a lot of these other countries. But to be honest with you, neither the British nor the French nor the Canadians nor the Danish have released secret cases from their military pilots or from their military personnel. So they really haven't done any better than the U.S. has over the years. They're just getting to the point we reached 30 years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, and that's a point I've heard others make as well. What do you think about the energy technology type of suppression that may be happening related to UFO secrecy?
Yeah, I take kind of a pessimistic view on the energy stuff. I don't actually believe that this government is withholding any kind of, quote, magic, unquote, technology. I just do not believe it's there. Otherwise, I don't think we'd be spending tens of billions of dollars on more or less conventional aircraft and rocket technology, and the infrastructure in this country is built around petroleum energy and nuclear energy and now some wind energy. But I just don't think that anything is being squelched that has to do with, say, antimatter or anti-gravity or anything like that. It's nice to think that, but it's not happening.
Okay, interesting. So, and then you also talked about earlier the Stephenville report and how significant you felt it was. What do you think is so important about that report?
Well, yeah, I think it's vastly important. And there have been a few other UFO cases throughout history where eyewitness testimony and radar technology and radar returns, excuse me, have corroborated one another. And that's what the Stephenville report does so well. We have eyewitness testimony of people seeing objects at certain directions at certain times, and lo and behold, when we get the FAA tapes and analyze them, by God, there's unknown objects in almost the same directions and at the same time as some of the good witnesses on January 8, 2008, said there were objects. So we have a very definite one-to-one correspondence with a little bit of room in there for people being vague about directions. But generally, unknown objects were flying around the Stephenville area on January 8th at the same time as U.S. Air Force jets were and an AWACS plane. So, again, what is going on there? Very, very strange.
What do you think of James McGaha? Did you see his response to that in the Popular Mechanics?
No, I can't say as I have. I've debated McGaha on the phone once. I find the man to be extremely devoid of any knowledge of the UFO subject. I can't say as I read his report in Popular Science, so I'm not going to characterize it. But based on what I heard of McGaha on both my interview, my debate with him, and TV programs, he knows nothing about the real UFO phenomenon. He just throws the same canards out, and the same falsehoods and pseudoscience that all his fellow debunkers do. They don't want to get down to nuts and bolts, because when you do, you can't explain the phenomenon.
Yeah. His response was very short, actually. His response was just that radar data isn't reliable.
Well, that's such a crock of bull hockey that I can't believe it. If radar data isn't reliable, then by God, we wouldn't be landing the hundreds and thousands of aircraft at U.S. airports and at airports all across the USA every day. And that's just a dumb statement.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty funny. We use it for weapon systems. We use it for air safety, but it's not a reliable technology.
It's the last resort of a person who just doesn't want to admit and say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I wanted to ask you also about the UFO Research Coalition, how that started up, and what did they do?
Well, that's an excellent question, Alejandro, and you're going to like this answer. The UFO Research Coalition basically came about as a result of Robert Bigelow. Now the UFO Research Coalition is an association of MUFON, the Fund for UFO Research, and the Center for UFO Studies, the three large organized groups in the United States. And back in the mid-90s, Robert Bigelow approached us, MUFON and the Fund and Kufos, and said he had some money he wanted to spend on the subject, and he wanted us to get together as an organization, as a formal organization. So we formed the UFO Research Coalition, which has as its address my home address, but nonetheless, we have that organization in place, and we then received funding from Robert Bigelow back in the 1990s. So that's how that organization, that's the genesis of the UFO Research Coalition.
Yep, someone earlier asked, and I talked a little bit about it while you were off the line, but someone in the chat had asked about Bigelow and with MUFON, and what do you feel Bigelow's interest is?
Well, Mr. Bigelow has a very sincere interest in the UFO subject. I recall reading a paper he wrote once. He had some kind of a UFO experience, a sighting of some type, I believe it was, back in the 1950s. And that interest in UFOs has never left him, just like all the rest of us who get involved in this subject for life. So he really does want to know what's going on with the UFO subject, and he's also interested in allied subjects like, for example, cattle mutilations and after-death survival of the consciousness, this type of thing. He has interests in sort of a range of other phenomena in addition to UFOs. But I do believe it's genuine, and he wants to now use his money to try to see if he can weasel out some secrets.
Yeah. Someone asked in the chat, the same gentleman who asked before, good buddy Paul Robinson, asked about media exposure. Couldn't he get some major media exposure? But it seems like throughout his years of being involved with these fields, he doesn't seem to be too interested in media exposure, but looking for real data or information.
Yeah, Robert Bigelow isn't in this just for the attention. He could probably get enough. He gets enough attention with his Bigelow Aerospace Company as it is, probably. But he's very averse to having photographs of him taken, or at least he was back then. And he rarely grants an interview to the press, even on his space station projects. And the same applies to his UFO activities. If there's going to be an interview with Robert Bigelow, it's going to be only very rarely. And a lot of times he'll have the people that are working for him, say at NIDS, Colm Kelleher or someone like that, give a paper or speak to the press on his behalf. He's very reticent to really get involved in the media.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned NIDS, and that's a good example with what the National Institute of Discovery Sciences that he funded and all the work they did. They really didn't have a press section where they got out to the press. They wrote some papers that got out to people. The biggest media thing they had was George Knapp's book, The Skinwalker, about the Skinwalker Ranch, which I definitely encourage anybody to check out who hasn't. Or you could actually go to MUFON.com and order some of his talks, his DVDs from symposiums in the past, George Knapp talks, which just incredible type of stuff.
Yeah, you know, you're right there. They released some information on their website when NIDS had a website. They may still have one archived. But I highly recommend the Hunt for the Skinwalker book, especially the last few chapters in that book are completely mind-expanding and really do offer some clues as to how humanity and how science might approach a subject like UFOs that's kind of seems to be averse to too much publicity. If you put too much instruments there, the subject vanishes. But there's some clues in that book as to the next step for looking into this subject. And I found it to be a very valuable read, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what my next topic was going to be, is next steps in looking into this subject. What do you see as the near future in this arena?
Yeah, there's only one course that I see, Alejandro, and it's basically we have got to get mainstream science involved in looking into UFO reports. And how one does that, I don't know, but I have some clues, but we have got to first show the scientists, like we did 40 years ago, that we have an ongoing phenomenon. And people who are looking into things that happened in the 1950s, that's all well and good, and I find it to be extremely interesting, but that doesn't convince today's scientists. They want to know what happened yesterday in the UFO phenomenon. So if we can get good cases to them and to show that something puzzling is still happening and somehow raise some money in the process that we can then farm back into the scientific field, I think we'll start making strides toward understanding this phenomenon, because it's going to be the scientists with their laboratories and instruments and time who are going to unravel this. Unfortunately, it's not going to be you or me or Bruce McAbee or John Schussler. We're only the John the Baptists. You know, we're only the John the Baptists.
I gotcha, and I agree with that 100%, you know, that really the scientists are who the media and the populace listens to. You know, convincing the populace can help convince others, but really the population isn't going to be able to convince a major institution to open up some sort of investigation. The scientists will. And
right.
I find that it does seem to be more and more that scientists are interested.
Oh, well, I hope so. I don't see a big trend in that area, and I don't see them rushing to jump into the water. But I think that's what MUFON's part of our goal is, to educate the public, and we have got to get the word out there about these good cases. That's all I can say on that. I mean, we have just got to get the word out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm confident if the scientists did get involved and do some good research, and I think you are too, that they would find something there.
Yeah, well, that's no doubt true. We've got to unravel and roll back 40 years of ridicule into the subject, and that's not going to be an easy thing to do. We have to unlearn them in all these years that they've been going down the Condon Committee road of there being no scientific pay dirt in UFOs. We have to get them to look anew at the subject, that there is indeed something going on here. And it may not give us immediate pay dirt on technology, but it will give us an insight into what might be happening to us vis-a-vis another intelligence.
Yeah. Do you hear, kind of changing the subject a bit, because there's some more chat in the chat room, and I'm sure this is something you face, because it's something, you know, I think we all run across. People who theorize that the extraterrestrials are demons.
Yes, I have encountered that thought, that idea a lot. I think that's I just cannot proceed along those lines. Demons is an aspect of religion, and religion isn't science. I'm a religious man, but in religion, it doesn't follow the rules of science. So almost anything is possible. The supernatural, mm-hmm. almost anything is possible. So I don't think we can proceed at all if we have to assume that it's demons. We've got to assume that we're dealing with a culture, a technology that we can use science to understand. Demons mm-hmm. are beyond science, and we might as well just throw up our hands and all go back to, you know, to doing other things we want to do.
Right.
Unfortunately, how I feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose the signal, the Virginia State Director is starting up her car now, and she's going to be driving off, and I'm still on the telephone. But so they just got tired of waiting. But nonetheless, I apologize if my signal should break up as we're going through Baltimore.
Well, we're almost done. Tell that hasty Virginia State Director to give you a couple minutes.
Yeah, she's tolerant about that. And I might say have another renowned UFO researcher in my car, Antonio Huneas. So they're all here at this conference this weekend trying to unravel what's going on with UFOs.
Yeah, well, great. You know, thanks for joining, and thanks for taking some time in the middle of your conference, too, because I know those are a lot of work. Those are a lot of networking that's great to do, a lot of meeting and talking with some friends or some people you admire, and exchanging some wonderful ideas. So thanks for taking time out to do that. What are some things that you're learning out there at the conference?
Well, you know, at the Info Conference, one learns a lot of things in addition to UFOs. The UFO talks came from Bud Hopkins, who gave an overview on the abduction phenomenon, and the other UFO segment will come from myself tomorrow morning when I talk about Stephenville and the MUFON initiative with Robert Bigelow. So in the course of being at Info, one learns about, for example, Freemasonry, or cryptozoology, this type of thing. And so, yeah, I've learned some kind of interesting things in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Do you see some similarities with this phenomena and some of those others that they talk about there?
Yes, I sure do, especially in cryptozoology, where we're talking about strange animals. That field is facing the same kind of ridicule, and they have the same kind of evidence, largely anecdotal, that the UFO field has. So, yeah, they face a lot of the same issues, only they're not as well known. They even mm-hmm. are further back in the public education arena than we are, and we're not very far ahead.
Right. I know they really struggle in that arena. But luckily we get some attention.
Yeah, we sure do. And there are a bunch of mysteries out there, And it never fails to remind me that there's more unknown than known things in the world. We think we know a lot, but what we really are just scratching the surface of what we know, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, because that's a good reason to keep pushing ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's fortunately, because things might get kind of bland if we figure it all out.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before we do that, Alejandro, if ever.
Right. If that is even what we're here to do.
That's right. That's
Democratic communists in there is talking. Well, everybody's talking a lot of philosophy in the chat room, and that's kind of the root of philosophy is knowledge, and can we even obtain knowledge?
Yeah, you're 100% right, but we have a few tools to do that, and one of those tools is the scientific method, and that I keep coming back to that because it's going to be the scientific method that really gives us answers, not speculation or endless philosophizing about the subject, but somebody ultimately has to put something on a laboratory table or has to go out into the field and actually do some physical work on samples. And this is what's going to give us our answers. They have to point antennae at the sky, and they have to take spectrographic pictures of UFOs if and when they can. And I'm hopeful that if such an approach is followed, we will indeed find out at least get a few answers to what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm in complete agreement. I mean, I'm a fan of philosophy, but I'm a student of psychology for that same reason, to put the scientific method to some of these ideas to actually figure out much more about the nature of ourselves and everything else around us. And that's why I wholeheartedly agree with the application of the scientific method. And if it's done in the manner it should be, and not to say that the people who are trying to do it aren't doing it well all of the time, it's just not having the resources.
Well, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
So that's exciting about the Bigelow thing, and hopefully we can get some of these major institutions involved in putting their efforts towards it as well.
Well, yeah, I don't think the Bigelow thing is something we can count on for a long time. Maybe I hope we can count on it for at least a year, but I hope it's going to be sort of something that does indeed cause other institutions to get involved, to see that we can do good work, and that they will too come on board once Mr. Bigelow gets the information he needs and no longer really has need for any new cases. We've really got to build on that, and this is a chance to get in on the ground floor for MUFON to show that, put its money behind its mouth, as it were, that we can do good casework, and that the UFO subject has some information you can glean once you get out there in the field.
Yeah, so everybody, send us your reports. You know, if you're seeing something, especially if you see something land, or if you have some physical trace evidence from perhaps, that's what I think is going to be interesting. I've seen cases, you know, people have seen scoop marks. I've seen these scoop marks fluoresce or other physical evidence from abduction cases. Anything you have, let us know. We're used to dealing with abductees. We know how to keep you anonymous. We know how to treat people with this issue. But we're pretty much out of time. So thank you very much for being on the show, Rob. Always a lot of fun talking to you.
Oh, Alejandro, it's been just a pleasure. And I wish we had 3 or 4 more hours. And I hope you will ask me to be on again, but it's been a complete enjoyment. And there's nothing better than doing this.
Great. Well, then I will have you on again. And for next week, I have certainly a very interesting person. At a new time, we're going to do Thursday at 6 p.m. Mountain Time instead of the normal Saturday time. I'm going to have Clifford Stone, who is a Roswell resident who claims to have been part of an Army crew who recovered crashed UFOs. So we'll have him talk about that. And he also does a lot of freedom of information request where he gets information on official documents related to UFOs. So we'll talk a lot about that. Everybody come back, because I know people have a lot of questions for Clifford. Those are some pretty extraordinary claims that he has. So it'll be really interesting to see what he says. Sorry, Mo, don't worry. You'll be able to listen later if you can't come in live. But thanks for being here. We'll talk to everybody again. And join me on UFO Not Radio tomorrow night on Blog Talk. I'll be giving some more UFO updates.